Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You're tuned into Life is a Sacred Journey. Every week, we bring a new perspective to aging and caregiving. Here is your host, Michelle Pope.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of you out in the virtual neighborhood of Life is a Sacred Journey. It is my honor and privilege to be the host of Life is a Sacred Journey. My name is Michelle Pope, and it is so good to be with you every Friday morning at 8 o'clock on Facebook Live, and then throughout, it goes out throughout the stratosphere. I want to thank my producer, Felicia, for everything that she does to make Michelle Pope Productions, as well as Life is a Sacred Journey, something that comes forth to you every single week, as well as make sure that it gets out into the world. I want to say thank you to all of my TikTok followers. Yes, Michelle Pope is on TikTok. There are 130,000 people following us on TikTok. So thank you to all of you that are following us there. I want to thank Dr. Pearl, who was a major part of that explosion on TikTok. He will be coming back. We will be having more discussions with Dr. Pearl. I also got my book in the mail, The Sudden Caregiver, A Roadmap for Resilient Caregiving. Last week, we had Karen Warner-Schuler on, and she is also going to be sending some copies that we will be distributing to the Life is a Sacred Journey audience. And so thank you so much, Karen, for coming on Life is a Sacred Journey and The Sudden Caregiver, A Roadmap for Resilient Caregiving. At some point, I'm going to have Karen, Stuart Furman, and Carolyn Brent and a few other people on a panel to talk about caregiving. I dreamt about that last night. I actually envisioned it and saw it, and I haven't asked any of them yet, but Stuart, I know you're there, so put that in your head. And I'm just so thankful for all of you out there in the virtual neighborhood who have made Life is a Sacred Journey something that is important to the lives of caregivers and those individuals that are living just caring and living this sacred journey as we age in place. I consider myself an ageism advocate. You know, I really believe in advocating for ageism. Ageism to me is not just about me, meaning my aging, but it's also the way we treat children. It's also ageism, you know, so we're going to talk about, that's my one of my ponderings today. My second pondering today that I thought a lot about, and I haven't been able to get it off my mind, I have tried to get it off my mind, is what does it mean to really own our own power? I've been writing a lot about that. Write in the chat if you know your thoughts about that. What does that mean when we say we want to own our own power? Is it autonomy? I believe it's a piece of that. Is it meaning to be free to live our lives in the way that we see that we were created or made? What does it mean to own your own power? Why don't you write in the chat what that means to you? Let's share with each other what it means to own our own power. For me, it means freedom. To own my own power means freedom, to be able to live where I want to live, go to school, work, freedom. It's like my civil rights, all of that. And then owning my own power goes more inward, meaning the power to be kind, meaning the power to be grateful, meaning the power to walk humanely through the world. I don't always meet the mark. I think I didn't hit it yesterday in a meeting. I've been thinking a lot. I lost a couple of hours of sleep last night. I was in a meeting and I contributed, but I don't think I did it in the best way. So again, we're constantly reexamining our own power and how it goes out from us into the world and how it hits other people, you know, and that's what I didn't acknowledge yesterday when I was owning my own power to have an opinion about something, I wasn't acknowledging until after the fact, hindsight, that maybe I could have thought about it a little more and had a little bit more kindness in the delivery. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure because I'm very confused about the whole communication that I had. But again, owning our power means also knowing when to stop. When to stop talking, when to be silent, when to hold that thought because it's not fully developed or it's reactionary. And I think that's what one of my ponderings is today, is that we have become in this year, in the last five, six, whatever, or however it exists in your timeline of life, very reactionary to everything going on around us. We react to this political arena that surrounds us all the time, this vortex of chaos. We react to that. We react to, the violence and that is happening in our world today. We react to it, and then we come back down. So we're constantly going, react, calm down, react, calm down. And I've been reading about the impact of that on our mental status as well as our health, as well as our spiritual selves. It really attacks it, and it also attacks your health and your immunity system. So all of these things coming together, and that's what Life is a Sacred Journey is about. I'm trying to explore the connection of mind, body, and spirit. And I know there's great scholars out there. I've read the books, and yet nobody has taken it and really said, and then the medical field adopting it for preventative health care in a way where, and we are seeing more of it. So, again, I'm just saying that it becomes a system that replaces the old system and says, let's start with holistic stuff first. Because before there were hospitals and clinics and pharmaceuticals, there were teas and all kinds of things, pressure, acupuncture, all these things that created health environments for people, and we should marry them together with the science. And again, if you look at all of that, that's science too, and then begin to look at life a little bit differently. And then I believe that balance helps us to own our own power. So that's just one pondering that I had today. So write in the chat what it means to you to own your own power. What does it mean to say, I'm in this world and I exist as a part of a collective, and I own my power in that collective to advance the collective, and the collective being the human race? Okay? So I want to move from that to ageism. I have been so honored by Ashton Applewhite I think I interviewed her on Life is a Sacred Journey when we were only on Blog Talk Radio. Many of you, Stuart, remembers that, and many of you remember that Stuart was a guest. And then this platform is only a year or just a little over a year old. We celebrated our one-year anniversary. But Ashton Applewhite did something that I thought was an amazing thing. She's from Brooklyn, New York, so we're kindreds, you know, East Coast people. Yesterday somebody said, you truly are from the East Coast, because I was angry and my accent came out. I mean, it was like, Betty, if you're out there, you can relate to that. Whenever I get a little upset, that accent just comes boom, boom, boom. And I think it's weird, but it happens. But she is a woman who wrote an incredible book about ageism after she did something that I thought was remarkable. What she did is she grayed her hair and began to walk the streets, of course, in, you know, Brooklyn, New York, you walk around. In New York, you walk around. And began to really, as a science sociology project, to see how people would react to her. And she wrote a book, I'm going to find the name of it, This Chair Rocks, And if and she'll be on, and we'll talk more about it. But and she outlines the behavior of people, young and old, men and women, everybody, around ageism. And she did the ageism around seniors. And that just having gray hair created something for her that was an experience that made her feel invisible, that made her feel like she'd had no value. And again, so she went from one moment of not having gray hair out into the world of having gray hair, and then being treated so different within a 24-hour period that she wrote a book. She had written some other books prior to, but this started, and I know she's been an advocate for a long time. Now she's moved into an incredible arena that she's asked me to be a part of that I am so excited, called Old School. And Old School is a online, it's an incredible website. Please go to it. And it's old school. Like, how did we treat each other before? As well as, what's the new paradigm to aging? I love Kaiser for whatever reasons, and I don't love Kaiser for whatever reasons. But when Kaiser does a commercial to tell me that at 63, that 63 is the new 50-something, then you're telling me that the years that I have lived between 50 and 63 have no value and that I want to be there. And you're making the assumption that aging, or you're creating a stereotype around aging, that it's something where youth is like, I want to go back to there. Now, I have sciatic issues that I didn't have in my 40s. I would love to not have them because I think I'm going to have them for the rest of my life, even though with yoga and all these kinds of things, it's gotten tremendously. I'm like 98% pain-free without any medication or anything. But at the end of the day, in my 40s, I was running at least, 2 to 5 miles every single day. Here we forward to 63, I'm not doing that. I'm walking an hour a day, 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes in the evening. But at the end of the day, I am not unhappy at being 63. Why? Because I'm alive. And that gives me an opportunity to do things that maybe I hadn't done before. It gives me an opportunity to dream in a different way because my family is launched, my children are launched, and so I don't have to worry about, I worry about them all the time. Of course I do. I'm their mom. I love them. But at the end of the day, I'm not worried about certain things that had to do with their development. So they're launched, and so there's a great sense of joy in that I'm living in. So to tell me that I should go back and that it's the new something, like we can't have vitality and be a part of a thriving existence after 50-something is totally wrong. And it sets people up to make jokes about their ageism, to feel sabotaged, as the movement says, the old school clearinghouse. Old school clearinghouse is a wonderful place to go to learn about ageism, and you can join the movement. And and Ashton will talk more about it. But people feel sabotage when we set up these ground rules. When Oil of Olay says, "Oh, why don't you just say let's moisturize?" Because that's what I'm going to tell you. It's about moisture, 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 moisture. As much moisture as you can put in, there goes that accent again, moisture. Oh, gosh, I tickled myself. Moisture in your skin, then your skin is going to be plumped up, okay? And if you want to, you can go and do other things. But don't tell people that, the lines that they earn, don't act like they're ugly. If people choose to get rid of them, then that's your choice. That's owning your power again. But if you choose to love them and let them be present to the rest of the world, they should not be looked at as, you know, you're old and you're ugly because you have wrinkles. A lot of my wrinkles have come from a lot of pain. Frowning through some pain that maybe I couldn't speak to or you know, yeah, those kinds of things. So sabotage, discourage. We become outraged. You know, I know that happens with racism as well. We become outraged, and then what do we do with the outrageness? And I think that's what happened with me yesterday. I am so tired of the conversation around a certain issue and the lack of movement around it. I realize that I have pent up outrage around this topic, and it bubbles up in me when I'm in certain circumstances, and so I need to do a better job at controlling that and working, you know, fixing that. But the community also needs to be able to pay attention at how they're treating people and not be so surprised when they're outraged when you make a sign and it's a 12 font and you expect somebody with cataracts or an older person to see it, but yet you want their money. When we live in communities where the demographic shows that people are aging, but yet the signs are so small. And then when they begin to have accidents on the road at night because the roads aren't lit up, then you begin to say, oh, seniors shouldn't drive. So we need to think about what we're saying. And these things are good for everybody. Age-friendly communities, which I'm a part of that committee over here in Alameda County, they have, hands down, World Health Organization research has shown, what we do for our elders impacts the lives of our children and everybody in between in a positive manner. In a positive manner. If we have more parks, we have wider sidewalks where people can walk arm in arm with a walker. A walker looks like a stroller if you go back in time. So all these kinds of things are for the betterment of everyone. So when we think about it that way, then we begin to see community in a very different way. Community is something that, another thing I want to share with you that's happening this weekend. Community is when a group of people get together, all ages, all ethnic groups, and work for something that is really important, like sheltering people. There's a program called Winter Nights here in the Bay Area, and Concord United Methodist Church is a sponsor, meaning we host that program when we could during, meaning opening up our church and having people come in and be in the CUMC B&B. Yeah, we couldn't do that this year. So Carolyn Polson, I think she may be watching. If she isn't, she'll see it later. I promised her I would do this, and Kathy Evans Butler, all they got together and said, wait a minute, let's have a walk. We can walk 6 feet apart with masks downtown Concord and raise money for Winter Nights. No, we cannot open our church and house, but we can raise money so we can pay for hotel spaces so people, it's cold at night still. So if you're not doing anything, or you want to sponsor some people that are doing something great in the community, and if you're out there, Sandy, and you're listening this morning, put it in the chat what time and all of that, or whoever is out there from Concord United Methodist Church, put it in the chat. But you can go to the website, CUMC, Concord United Methodist Church, Concord, California, and you can see how to contribute to the Winter Nights program. It is a near and dear program to me because I believe that no individual should go unsheltered. Not when I walk around. Somebody told me, who told me this? Wanda Wallace, who has been on our, and she works in real estate. And she told me the other day that all the boarded up buildings across the United States, if we put every unsheltered person in all of those buildings, there would be no persons on the street and we would still have buildings left over. I started to cry when she told me that, because that meant we need to be in a movement to open up these boarded up buildings and not be waiting for the biggest dollar to come along and put and fix them up so our unsheltered citizens that live with us, owning our power again and around us, have a place to stay. And maybe, just maybe, we can put services in there. This was done in Canada. They took all, and it's a little tiny province, so yes, no, it's not the Bay Area. But just think about if we did that, where they took the homeless community, took an old building, fixed it up, homeless community put in, services put on the bottom floor. I think they made a 5-year commitment to these individuals, gave them stipends, helped them get jobs, helped them with their addictions, helped them with their education, and these families have thrived. They have not bounced back into poverty. But you can't do a one-up when a person has been living in poverty for many, many years and think that's going to change the trajectory of their life. No, they need people to walk with them and to be with them throughout the process. So that's a pondering around something that you can do for this weekend to help our unsheltered citizens throughout the Bay Area. Winter Nights is a Bay Area program, and it helps people who are unsheltered. And it started in the winter because, as you know, many people die on the streets of California, especially up north here in the winter. So I just remembered that. I apologize for skipping all over the place. So we're back to ageism. People who are aging feel sabotaged, discouraged, and outraged. They also feel damaged. They feel damaged because when we have stereotypes that speak to them and say to them that people are clueless or I'm ageless is to ageism as I'm colorblind is to racism. So when you say, oh, I'm ageless. Well, no, I'm not ageless. I'm aging. Trust me. But it's the same thing as saying to somebody when you say, I don't see color. Because you do see color. And you should see color. It doesn't have anything to do with racism at all. You know, that doesn't really get rid of racism. That's just another way that we've learned to speak about it in a way that keeps us from the trajectory of really digging deep in it. So when you say things are ageless, and, you know, I love when people say to me, you know, you don't look your age, but the other side of it is I kind of go, well, what does that mean? You know, because, again, you are aging, and on one hand, you have to take it as a compliment, but on the other hand, you also are looking at it and saying, okay, but do you not see me, right? Do you not see me? So ageism is a type of discrimination that involves a prejudice towards a certain group of people, and it relates to age. And similar to racism and sexism, ageism involves holding negative stereotypes. And I want to talk about some of those stereotypes that contribute to ageism. The first stereotype that Susan Fiske, who is a researcher, talked about relates to succession, which I love because this is happening to me right now, where younger people often assume that older individuals have had their turn, and so they should make their way for the younger generation. So it's like everybody keeps asking me when I'm going to leave ASAP. I don't know the answer to that. And I think it's because of my age they're asking me that question, but they're not looking at the vitality that ASAP gives me, the fact that I have something to focus my life around and to be all constantly learning and engaged. That's what's helping me to appear ageless. It's not that I'm not aging. It's just that I'm engaged and I'm in the world, and I love hanging out with all kinds of people, and I love hanging out with all ages, and I love learning about religion and theology, and I love being an advocate. That creates the agelessness that you think you see, right? That's it. It's not the other way around. So when I'm constantly being asked these succession questions, and I, of course we have a succession plan for ASAP. We're constantly working on that for the day that I do move on from here. That day will come. But it's not because I had my turn. My turn may not be up. Remember when you would play in the playground and you're like, my turn, and then somebody would come back and then it would be their turn again and you would feel a little cheated because you wanted your turn to last a little longer? We're not putting people out to pasture. It's not that anymore. We're living in a different time. And then the second stereotype that Fisk talks about is consumption. That young people frequently feel that limited resources should be spent on themselves rather than older adults. And this also, you know, we experienced this in the pandemic where people were talking about, you heard Dr. Pearl talk about it, and then we talked about it around racism, but ageism played a part in this too. Well, if we don't have, I'm not going to say who said this because this is not a political platform, but, you know, oh, well, we don't have enough ventilators. We need to give them to the younger people, the older people. Well, and that was said out loud by a politician. Ageism doesn't mean that the limited resources that we may have should be taken from the elder group first just because you think that they are at the end of life and, oh, well, they should be sacrificed for this piece of life. We experience that a lot in politics and how we use our money when it comes to senior programs, Medi-Cal, all of that. How easy it is to cut programs and funding. And again, I don't say easy, meaning people don't lose sleep and la la and that there's no thought to it. I'm not saying like that. But what I'm saying is, rather than saying, no, we will not touch this, we start there. We start from touching and cutting and slashing, and then we go, oops, we made a mistake. I can't tell you, for the last, 30 years of my life, we've been talking about a gray tsunami and all the things that we would need to prepare for our aging community. And I'm not talking about just the aging of the fragility parts of aging, just aging. We knew this, and we talked about it. I attended so many meetings. I have books behind on my bookshelf full of that stuff. 30 years later, we're still talking about what people need. What do we need to move into action? To build buildings where elders can age in place with younger folks so that younger folks don't have this consumption idea. You know, I know in Belgium and in Norwegian countries, they have that where college students are living with the elder and helping to care for the elder, therefore then they get their college education free. Why can't we think like that? Why are we so greedy for money? Money, to me, is the catalyst for all of this. I'm not telling people that they shouldn't have money to live. You got to have money. I paid almost $50 to fill my gas this morning. I needed money to do that. But at the end of the day, the money should be used for the better good. And when people are suffering, when you drive by People's Park up the street, there were people suffering there in the multitude in tents. You can smell the suffering there. And throwing stuff at it instead of actually looking at it, it's a mental health issue. So why aren't we doing more to help our mental health citizens? the ones that live on the street because the monsters chase them out of the buildings. That's what we're talking about when we think about consumption. And so you can talk about consumption across all the ends. When you think there's not enough resources, that we have to hoard them, or I have to take from this or not give to this in order for me to be in the position that I'm in, that's a caste system, that's systemic, and it crosses all the isms, ageism, racism, ableism, it crosses all of it. And so what do we need to do to be in movement around that? And finally, she says, we need to stop this generational divide conversation, because she said we have put young people in a place that they have held on to stereotypes that identify older adults as people who should act their age and not try to steal the identities of younger people, including such things as speech patterns and manner of dress. So people would think, if they were young, I don't hang out with those kind of young people, because all the young adults, the millennials and all the young people that I hang out with or just educate me all the time. I want to thank all of you. But manner of dress and speech patterns and all of that do not belong to one segment of the community. It is language and dress is universal, and it's an expression. I think, you know, I love, many of you know, I started my career in the fashion world, and so fashion is like art to me. I don't put together my outfits like, oh, it's a shirt or a pair of pants. I'm putting together a whole look. It's an art project when I pick out clothes. I'm surprised I'm still not in. That'll be my next, I'll go back. But at the end of the day, when you think that people are not acting their age, and that's where sexism and all that kind of stuff comes in. I remember once somebody said to me, oh, my parents, they can't be having sex. They're in their 70s. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? We did a show on sexism. It was one of the highest rated shows where, you know, we were talking about how come they don't have condoms in senior center homes and places, assisted livings, and provide them for seniors in a way. Because at that time, seniors were actually we were finding that there was a rise of STDs among people over the age of 65 because they didn't think that, one, they, of course, they weren't making children, they weren't doing that, but they were passing STDs because we don't talk about condoms for our seniors because they're not acting their age if they engage in intimacy, in sex. So again, we got to be careful what we're talking about, and we need to do it from a human place and not from the pieces of the places where you live out your human existence. And we want to talk about how common is ageism. You know, write in the chat, how many of you have felt ageism? What did it look like for you? You know, let's share those stories with one another so that we can understand what ageism feels like for each of us that are experiencing it. Some of us get away with not feeling it longer than others because of what we look like on the outside. But people know, and they treat you a certain way based on those three stereotypes kind of tentacle out to others. But how common is it? In the Gerontologist magazine, it was the 2013 issue, so it's a bit old, they found that 84 groups devoted to the topic of older adults were found on Facebook. So I'm sure that's changed over the years. That's changed probably dramatically in the last 8 years. But the reality is the 84 groups that they found in 2013 were created by people in their 20s to talk about older people. And I'm like, whoa, that's interesting. And then they said nearly 75% of the groups existed to criticize older people, and nearly 40% advocated banning them from activities such as driving and shopping. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Older adults also feel the impact of discrimination in the workplace. According to the U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission, almost a quarter of all the claims filed by workers are related to age-based discrimination. Also, the AARP reported that one in every five workers in the United States is over the age of 55, and nearly 65% of workers say they have experienced age discrimination at work, and 58% of those surveyed believe that ageism became apparent starting at the age 50. So if you're over the age of 50 and you're watching today, Life is a Sacred Journey, hit that like button, share, as well as when did you first, I asked that a few minutes ago, but I'm going to ask it again, write it in there. When did you first experience ageism? What did it look like? How did it make you feel? And what can we do together to be advocates? I'm going to close soon, but I also want to remind you that you can go to the oldschoolclearinghouse.com. Excuse me. It's an advocacy website created by Ashton Applewhite, and it has a lot of advocacy things that you can become engaged in. The movement around ageism. The movement around ageism will benefit us all. There will be a day when we realize that when a person is born, that if the quality of life that we create for that individual, meaning health, education, exposure to art and science and music and love, that person will be a healthy person, and that they will grow into a time where they will live out the season of their lives and hopefully have a long life where they will feel like, wow, I mattered, and that the people around me understood what it meant for me to own my own power at every season of my life. I call them seasons. Every decade is a different season for me. I plan my life that way, for as much as a person can truly plan, because it's really not in anybody's hands. But we need to combat ageism, and it's not because I'm at that age, but it's also for young people, because the other thing that's happening around ageism with younger people is that in every system that I'm a part of, we keep saying we need young voices, we need da-da-da-da, we need to get them engaged and involved, we need to build relationships with young people. We need to stop using people as tokens to pat ourselves on the back that we did it, like adding a man to something just because you forgot that a diverse world means having every gender at the table, every ethnic group at the table, or every age at the table. You know what I mean? So we got to just start thinking about what diversity means. Diversity means giving that space for everyone to own their power in that system, in that space. And we got to stop making people tokens, because I've been a token in many systems, and it is a burden. It is a burden to be the token, because the expectations then are that I am representative of why you put me in that token position, and then when I misbehave according to the token protocol, then I have damaged the very group or the very reason that you wanted me there. So tokenism doesn't work. And so because I am an individual within a subset of a whole bunch of things, and how I react to those things are my own personal reactions. And when I'm being asked to represent an entire group of people, that's a sticky wicket, because I don't think that I have the right one and I don't own that space by myself. So I think that we need to be careful when we start saying, well, we need to bring this in and that in because we realize that we haven't done the work. Let's look at the system and change the system so that we naturally invite to the table, intentionally invite into relationship everything that is not of you. Like, you know, so when I'm looking at people to hang out with, it's not that I don't hang out with black women, because I do, or black people or women. I hang out with other folks because I want to learn from their experiences and I want to understand, as well as, you know, in this day and age, we need to start being in each other's company so that we can learn. You know, my Asian brothers and sisters, recently I realized something happened to me when I heard about the violence that was being inflicted. And then when one of my Asian brothers and sisters came to me and said, that pain was being inflicted upon them primarily by African Americans, and that hit me in such a way that just, I don't know, I didn't know what to do with it. The pain was so, literally it felt, I've never been shot, but, you know, I'm gonna use that as sort of a comparison about what I felt the pain would feel like. And that's what it felt like. It was just like, oh, my God, that felt so bad because I wasn't sure how to handle that. I kept saying to the person, you know that I am an ally. Know that I would never, I would engage in debate and conversation prior, never, I, you know, inflicting pain on another human being is just not my thing. And I don't promote that kind of communication. Violent communication to me solves nothing because it only shows that you're physically stronger or that you have a weapon that makes you physically stronger than somebody else. Physical confrontation proves absolutely nothing. Intellectual confrontation is where I love that battlefield. And I'm more than happy to participate in, because that means that I'm open to debate, meaning I'm open to change of mind. And then I move from change of mind to conversation, because when I'm in intentional relationship, conversation, then no more debate. I'm not going to debate anymore once I have whatever. And then we're going to be in conversation, because then the journey is a lifelong journey of conversation and understanding. And so that intentionality space is a space where we all have to go in order to grow bigger out of all these isms that are just, I don't know, I just feel weighted down. I don't know how many of you feel weighted down, but I have felt weighted down over the last 8 weeks. I feel a tremendous weight of pressure, and I even find that my body is doing, I'm doing this, I'm leaning in when it's, you know, I'm trying to open up more because I'm just feeling like there's an anvil, two of them actually, on each side of me weighing me down. And I know that's pent-up emotion over the last 13 months. And so I'm thinking about all of us as I ponder all these things. And I pray that you are pondering all kinds of things as you walk through your journey in life, because nobody should feel disadvantaged or disenfranchised or not a part of this incredible journey. The world is a magnificent place. And then, you know, it is us. It is us as humans that have hurt each other. We're the ones that use these vile words against each other in thought and deed. You know, Dr. Pearl said something that I will always remember, and maybe that's why I'm so emotional around what happened in this dialogue that I was in yesterday, is we got to think and go back when we say things what I'm doing right now, and thinking about, did I say that right? Did I hurt? Did I maim? Did I do harm? And if so, then I have to be the big girl that I think I am, the human that I want to be, and go back and say, can we talk about that? Because I'm not sure if that came out with love. And if we do more of that, humble ourselves, now that it may not be received. This is the other thing that I've always told my children. When you say you're sorry, the person doesn't have an obligation to accept your apology. There's no obligation there. But you must acknowledge the harm that you have done and then move on. If the person doesn't accept your apology, that is their right. You can't be mad at them. You have to honor where they are. You have to pray that they will forgive you at some point. And remember what you did to create that space that that person is now in and may remain in throughout the you may have lost the relationship. So I pray that I didn't yesterday. I pray that I didn't. I felt I was speaking the truth. But I think I could have spoken it in a better way, in a kinder way. And that's what this world is all about. It's reexamining who we are, honoring the relationship that we have with one another, try not to crash into each other with word, mind, and deed. Yeah. So I'll be asking for forgiveness today. If it's something that, and I'm still contemplating that, so I'm going to be thinking about that. Whew, let's take a deep breath. I want you to breathe in this wonderful day that we made it to April 2021. Let's breathe that in. Breathe in that you made it to April 2021. Because there's over 500,000 something plus people that didn't. Breathe it in and breathe out hope and breathe in that you are wonderful and that your life is a sacred journey and you deserve to own your own power and we deserve to be the best we can be as we travel this world together. It's hard. Man, it's hard. But we can do it. We can make it together. So I thank you all for coming to Life is a Sacred Journey. You are an amazing group of people. You are very special to me. Some of you I know personally. Many of you I do not. So for those who I know personally, thank you for supporting Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay and Life is a Sacred Journey. We really appreciate everything that you do. Hit that share button. Let people know. I also want to let you know we are having a virtual fundraiser here at ASEB, a wine tasting on April 24th. Go to our website and check it out. The first one was wonderful. We're looking for some sponsors, so help us out if you can. And thank you. Thank you for making my life, for being a part of my purpose. You know, I think that I am living out my purpose. Some days I question I question that, but I think you're a part of it. I think you're a part of the purpose that I was created for, and so I thank you so much for being a part of it. Hug yourself. Give yourself a pat on the back. You made it through another week, and may the journey of life be sacred for you, and know that you are not alone in this sacred journey. Be well until we see you next week. I believe we have a guest next week. You'll see it. Felicia will put it out there. Thank you to all of you. Have a wonderful day in the virtual neighborhood. And remember, life is an incredible journey. It is sacred. It is sacred. And when we get to live it without ageism and racism and ableism and all of those things that tie us down and rob us of our individual power, we will find a humanity that is absolutely remarkable. So be the change you want to see in the world. Peace and God bless. Take care.